Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of May 8th, 2016. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Conversation today with Mary, a second Mary, not the same as before, but first the verses I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul for his week 6. This one I wrote 2 years ago, verse 6. As with all around me, I am reborn, composed of stardust, greater than I thought I was, an image in space and time of what the world believes I can be. And this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. Verse 6a. What sounds egotistical is, in fact, most humbling. I now see myself in everything around me and feel the whole world within my being as though I am rightfully meant to be here. Yeah, thank you, Mary, for talking. I think Mary thought we were talking in order to then talk later, so she kept coming up with good ideas for our conversation. It turned out to be quite a good conversation, I think. I hope you like it. Here you go.
You know, I think that one thing I think about a lot is how to get you with me out there in the world. And that's sort of my most obsessive thought that comes back. Also because we have this big world conference coming up.
All right.
And, you know, when you're in this echo chamber of other eurythmists or... Like last night I did, even though I was sick, I did something for the kindergarten parents. And they're all so interested. You know, and then you go into the bigger world and it's like you don't even exist.
Right.
And I'm reading, you know, some of the older literature. And at one point, Laurie Meyer Smith was the first eurythmist. She's right. Talking to Steiner and said, this is going to be so popular, it's going to be more popular than football. You know, and of course, that's football in Europe, which is soccer, which is phenomenally popular, you know.
Right.
And it just seems like there's so many things that are so popular that we just are, it's such a sideline. So I have concerns about where we're going with that.
I hope Rudolf Steiner said to her, well, I would caution you against such optimism.
yeah, she's a little too optimistic, right? But, you know, in her little echo chamber of her life, it was very, very important because it was brand, brand new and, you know, people came flocking to see the brand, brand new thing.
Yeah.
You know, and now people still go to see the brand new thing. You know, the why we'll offer this course in Mia or this thing with balls from Hawaii, or, you know, the latest thing that somebody's figured out to do. Or somebody was telling me now there's this new neurotherapy that kids in the school want to try called Arrowhead something, you know, that uses a computer to hook up to certain brain areas that aren't working well so the kids with autism can do better. And, you know, and everybody gets on board, right?
Yeah.
Bam.
Well, you know, eurythmy takes effort to watch, to participate, to do. It takes effort. And so right away you're struggling from behind because humans don't really want to do effort. Reaching for a drug and putting it in their mouth is the most effort they want. They don't even want to go get the drug. They want it to come to their door.
Okay, now you don't sound like an optimist.
Okay. But,
Yeah, you know, we did all that truth eurythmy, you know, the big truth eurythmy course.
Yeah,
and then I see kids and I say, okay, we could do this if you do eurythmy for 3 sessions a year for 3 years instead of wearing braces. And the kids say, well, I'll take the braces.
Yeah, I'll take the braces. Yeah.
It's too much work for the kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What, 9 times to commit to that and to practice every day?
Yeah.
No, I'll take the braces.
You know that individuals can make commitments. If I was talking to you, you and I could agree to make commitments for each other, and we would follow through. But if you talk about humanity in general, there's not really much you could say in a positive sense about...
That's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, so another thing I've been thinking about a lot is 40 days. This I've been thinking about for a couple of years now. What happens in 40 days?
Right.
So I was teaching at a teacher training course in Idaho. Which I love Idaho. You would love Idaho.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was these young people, some of these young people in the course. There's this young woman in her 20s. And so she says she has this practice. She has a Kundalini yoga practice. And so she said 40 days. When you do something for 40 days, you cause a physiological change.
Oh.
Now, we know we cause physiological changes in your rhythm. We usually say 7 weeks, you know?
Yes.
So 49 days, right?
There you go, yeah.
So she said in 40 days, all the red blood cells change over.
Oh.
And that it's a Kundalini practice. They have a bunch of different times, so they also have 900 days.
Right.
To do something else.
Right.
But so then everybody in the room, all these teacher trainees got really excited and go, okay, what's 40 days from now? Let's mark it on the calendar. Let's all talk to each other about it, you know. And then it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I didn't succeed either. But when my friend Lynn, who's a arrhythmist who lives in the area, we met, we said, okay, let's do something for 40 days. So we did, I think, speech and hallelujah. And I really did do it for 40 days, no matter what happened.
Yep.
And yesterday was the last day.
Yep.
I'm sorry we didn't combine it with Lent, because that would have helped too.
Yeah.
But I did start to notice some changes. But I'm really thinking, you know, the commitment, like you say, you have to do it every day. I mean, behind that, what is 40 days? What in the world is 40 days? Why was Jesus in the wilderness for 40 days?
Yep.
Why is it 40 days till Houston?
And then the flood, too. The flood, too, the great flood. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, 40 days. What is the magic of 40 days?
Right.
What can we cause to change in 40 days?
It's more than a month. It might just, mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it might just mean more than a month. You know, if you do something more than a month, then maybe you'll be hooked on something. I mean, rather than the exact 40 days, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I looked up the Kundalini people, and they do say physiological change, which, of course, you know, coming from your rhythm, that's really exciting, physiological change.
Yep.
You know, can we actually create physiological change in 40 days? So, I mean, Steiner has these rhythms. One day is an eagle, so all those kind of thoughts like, I can change my thinking, you know, all the tapping and the cognitive therapies.
Right.
I can change a thought, and that can change with my ego force in a day, right?
Okay.
My etheric body says can change in a week. I mean, astral body can change in a week. And then the etheric body, 7 weeks, and the physical body, a year.
So there's the 40 days is the etheric body.
Yeah, I guess.
Pretty close.
But it's a little bit different rhythm. Yeah, it's sort of close, but it's something different. They don't say Jesus was in the wilderness for 49 days.
No, they don't.
It's always 40, isn't it?
I mean, when I think of the etheric change, I think of habits, the habit life. Whatever you cannot do for 40 days, you have a darn good chance of not doing it ever, like stopping a habit. Or picking up a habit, if you do it for 40 days, you're probably going to be able to hang on to it, meditating or whatever. I think of 40 days as the etheric change, and I think of it as a habit change, the habit life.
Yeah. And what does that really mean? What's the habit life? The habit life is the etheric body. But that's kind of abstract. The idea that your blood cells change over, I thought was pretty nice. But then I looked it up, and blood cells live 120 days. So trying to figure it out mathematically.
Uh-huh.
Does that mean if each one lives 120 days, that the overall change could happen in 40 days of some millions of them? I can't comprehend the math.
Yeah, physiological change, that's already kind of a... I mean, if I cut my fingernails, I've made a physiological change, right? So it's... I mean,
right.
What does it mean, physiological change? Is it... A straightening of the spine certainly would be a physiological change, or a bending or a twisting of the skeletal structure. That's a physiological change. A growth that stops growing, or a growth that appears on an organ. I mean, what do you think of as physiological changes? What are they?
Well, I guess the big one is the teeth, right? And I worked with kids that have given up their glasses because their eyesight changed. So eyes and teeth can change,
yep.
And that's a physiological change. I remember Linda Neuhofer, my movement therapy course in England, was very, very proud of being able to get undescended testicles down. That was one of her, one of her claims to fame, you know. That's a physiological change. I think the blood, you know, changing something in your blood would be a physiological change. Say if you were anemic and then you weren't anymore.
All right. So based on numbers, so a blood test showing numbers changing, okay.
Yeah, or tumor declining. I have a bad knee, which is got the softening behind the kneecap. And I was just reading, you know, kind of saying that you can't say that your arrhythmia is ever bad for the knees. You know, that if you're stepping correctly, it's going to make your knees healthy.
Right.
So I'm thinking for my next 40-day project to see if I can change my knee.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, after a while, we're more fixed as we get older and older. Like, my teeth aren't probably going to change.
I'm always impressed by the... I mean, we go mountain climbing every year or so, and it's always hard. And even when we were young, it was hard. But now we're constantly looking to see, can we still get stronger? After a day or two of climbing, does it get easier? And sure enough, even at 60 years old, we're still able to get stronger when we work at it. So physiological...
Yeah, so 40 days of climbing would be really significant.
Amazing,
wouldn't it?
Amazing. But so we're talking about arrhythmia in the wider world, how to make it more accessible. This popular idea, you know, if you think of what's popular, well, pornography, that's popular, and football, American football is popular, alcohol is popular. So if you think, I want to be popular like that, then you're kind of going the wrong way, aren't you? You got to find the kind of popularity you're looking for is... What? Kindness. How popular is kindness? It's really not that popular, but that's the kind of popular I want. That's the kind of popular I'm looking for.
And dedication and compassion, those things, which, of course, then the big thing that everybody's thinking about is how in the hell is Donald Trump winning all these primaries? He's behaving in a way that, even this, he says Nevada. The last time anybody came to Nevada and said Nevada, they were like booed off the stage.
Right.
And he can say it over and over and over again, and nobody cares. I mean, even that's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm reading Grant's memoirs of the Civil War days, and of course, humans haven't changed in 150 years. They certainly haven't changed in 60 years since the Nazis were in power and taken over the world. How could we think that there's any difference now between that and now? Of course, there's 20 or 30% of any country that's willing to grant total power to a dictator who's their race and their mentality. They're totally willing to do that. And if the 30% are the only ones that are awake and alive, they're going to win the election. It's exactly the way it's always been. It's the rest of us that are the mystery. How come 70% of us are... or at least 40% of us are not caring, so that the other 30, you and I, are upset against the 30 that are totally going full bore racist, and then the 40 in the middle don't seem to care. That's always the mystery to me, is how to wake up the middle people, the ones that are just going about their life. They don't even know who the current president is. They never thought about it. That's the mystery to me.
Well, I guess it's because we're so big that you go about your ordinary life in your small area, and you don't notice the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty hard not to notice the bigger picture these days, you know, with so much news.
Well, maybe. Apparently, though, it's quite possible to not wake up. I suppose we've had such a stable, for at least a certain group of people, it's been a pretty stable country for many decades. They haven't gone to war. They haven't been drafted. They got rich parents or whatever, or regular, normal parents, and they can just go about their lives without, you know, we, I should say, maybe it's Ahriman, giving us the little toys that distract us enough that evil can go on right in front of us and we're not even noticing because we're looking at ourselves in the little device. It's so marvelous. I mean, I'm totally optimistic for myself and for people I know, but in general, I don't know. We need divine intervention, as far as I can tell. We need some help from the powers to get things back on track. I have no idea how to do that, how to make people interested in Eurythmy. That's the very same realm. I don't know anything about that. How can that happen? It's a good thing. It's healthy. If you do it, you're stronger. If you watch it, you feel better. But no, that's not true for most of the people. They won't do it, and they don't want to watch it. And it's very weird. I don't understand.
Yeah. And I have been in Milwaukee a pretty long time, and I've done so many different things here. And yet it just seems to disappear. It's sort of like pouring water away, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't hold. No matter how hard you try, it just pours away. Oh, wow. You know what that made me think of? Pouring water on the earth. You know who does that?
Say it. Who?
The Buddhists. And there's an incredible story. This is one of my favorite stories. This is going to make me an optimist again.
Good.
So Buddha had, 365 incarnations. You know the Jataka tales?
Yes.
All right. So every time Buddha, in his incarnations, ever did a good deed, he would pour a drop of water on the earth. And they still do this, Buddhists do that still. And so when Buddha was sitting under the tree, the banyan tree, he was assailed by all sorts of negative forces.
Right.
And there were demons that came and beautiful ladies. You know the story.
Yeah.
All these different people came to interrupt him. And then finally comes this earth spirit and says, "This is the center of the earth. You have no right to be here. Who gives you the right?" And all this water from these 265 incarnations rose up like a great flood and washed all of it away to free him.
Yes.
And there's this beautiful gesture, if you can picture this, where he has his right hand, he's sitting his right hand, palm open towards the earth, and his left hand open up to the heaven.
Yes.
He's calling on all the water from the earth, from all those hundreds and hundreds of good deeds to come and wash away the evil.
Yes.
I think that's a good image. So
Wonderful.
Maybe putting little drops of water here and there.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll come back.
There you go. I mean, for me, it's all, I always think of the 12, it's the parable of the 12 apostles. I mean, Christ is speaking to 5,000 people here and 1,000 people there, but he's got 12 people that stick up for him. And of those 12, Some of them are varying, and some of them are vacillating. And look at what do you want about numbers, and what do you want about if the Son of God, the Son Spirit, comes to Earth, and he can get only 12 people to be with him, and of those 12, there's some vacillations, and I don't know. It just makes me think numbers do not matter. Numbers have nothing to do with it. You do your thing. You do your good thing, and don't count. Stop counting. You just keep doing your good thing.
Yeah.
Keep doing your good thing.
You're right. You just have to keep doing your good thing. Well, I think that could be an interesting conversation.
Like what?
Now we're getting a good idea.
Like what?
Do these positive efforts actually go away, even though they seem to disappear like water? I mean, in the Buddhist story, it certainly did come back.
Right. Well, of course, they exist. They constantly exist in you. If I was clairvoyant and I saw you, I would see your good deeds just all around you. And I would, maybe you and I, if we're not clairvoyant, we just see this person is glowing. This person, I want to be with this person. If there is an Akashic record, of course, that's another matter.
Right. I mean, we do all our bad things still, too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean,
And what color is it? It's browns and yellows, and then over time, it's kind of reddish, and then over time, it's just getting better, a little bit better all the time. A little touch of blue coming out now and then. I think it's all the mixture of what we're adding. Habit in this 40 days, there are so many little time units. For me, 40 seconds is a darn long time. If I can hold a thought for 40 darn seconds, I'll be amazed that I have not lost my thought. 40 days is a heck of a long time. I'm doing the dishes and I'm saying, okay, I'm quiet now. I'm going to be quiet now. I'm doing dishes. And darn it, 40 seconds later, I have forgotten my entire life, and I'm singing a song. And, 40 seconds is a darn long time. there are, in 40 years, of course, you're married to someone 40 years. I've heard about this. You know, people.
That's how long Moses was in the desert, right? 40 years.
I thought it was 40 days, but maybe 40 years.
No, he was 40 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are all these different cycles, all these different cycles of time that if you can do something for this long, then such and such. 40 days is a long time. 40 days is a darn long time.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And then that Cooligan, you know, the guy who used to run the international teacher training.
Yeah, Cooligan.
He says seven is the number for the angel to intervene.
7 days.
So if you can hold your back for even seven seconds.
Oh, nice.
In a situation.
Nice. I felt that personally. I was facing some inner demon that I had always turned away from. But after, I suppose it was 7 seconds, suddenly the demon disappeared and I was allowed access, whatever. So I think, yeah, that's a totally reasonable time limit, 7 seconds.
Yeah, and so he says a practice of 7 days would be a practice to connect to angels. And 7 minutes, you know, a teacher could take 7 minutes to prepare something for the kids, right? But the 7 seconds, I really like that. Something is really not going well,
and
you actually pause for 7 whole seconds.
Yes. The samurai have 7 breaths, maybe. It's this length of time, the maximum length of time to decide the most important decision of your life. 7 breaths.
Really?
It's great. They're pretty quickly changeable people. I mean, but once they make up their mind, boom, they stick to it. And
Who says that one?
The samurai, at least in their text, the Hagakure.
Oh, the samurai.
You know, if you're trying to decide whether to revolt and kill your master and break off on your own, you shouldn't wait any longer than 7 breaths. To make up your mind.
Oh, because then you're hesitating and overthinking.
Yeah. Just get on with it.
Oh, 7 breaths. That's manageable, isn't it?
And there was a great series of books. Frank Herbert wrote these Dune books, and he had so much spirituality in them. One was these highly evolved people would meditate for 100 heartbeats, and in 100 heartbeats, they would go through their entire meditation process. And in 100 heartbeats, they'd come out the other end completely transformed and renewed. And I've done that a few times. That's a great little length of time.
How do you do it? You'd be so busy counting your heartbeats.
I know.
That how would you do anything else?
That's good.
I mean, is a meditation just simply counting your heartbeats?
I think that if you're good at it, you know what 100 heartbeats is without counting anymore. Or it's a background kind of a thing, but you count it, but it's not you counting it, it's your lower self counting.
Oh, that's interesting.
I suppose. You know, I've known some Eurythmists who are evangelical Eurythmists, that anytime they're on a plane, anytime they're on a bus, anytime they're on the street, they're going to turn to the person and say, have you let Rudolf Steiner into your life? Have you taken Eurythmy into your life? Have you that kind of thing? And I've never liked it. I don't like that. Whoever invented evangelicalism, I think that's wrong. It doesn't work. It drives people away. The fact that you don't know
we live in Texas.
Well, that would be an explanation if that was true. So I won't say anymore. But it doesn't work. I mean, the idea, how can we get, of course, the motivation would be, how can we get Eurythmy into the world? Well, you just have to tell people and every chance you get. It ends up frightening people. They think, if that crazy person is promoting something, then I'm going to go away. I'm never going to look at that again.
Right.
So we're at a loss. Yeah. How do you do it? You do it by doing Eurythmy again and again and again. And the random person, I was attached to it. When I saw it, it struck a chord in me. I've known people who come after a performance, they come backstage and they just kind of kneel and they say, I want to serve you. I wish to carry your equipment out to the van for you. You know, they're just so darn moved. I mean, so it is reaching somebody. It does reach somebody. It's just not reaching everybody, and it's certainly not reaching the majority.
Right.
I often wonder. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say we don't always explain, and it doesn't do any good to explain. But the fact that you're not simply watching, there's an effort involved. Everything else in your life, when you go to a movie, you watch, and you expect the movie to draw you in. You're just sitting there, and then suddenly you're in the movie. That makes a good movie. Eurythmy doesn't do that. It never was doing that. It's not supposed to do that. You are supposed to draw the eurythmy into you. You're supposed to be sitting there, reaching up to the eurythmy, pulling it toward you, as far as I can tell. And so the fact that that's opposite to the rest of entertainment culture drives a wedge between most people and eurythmy, because it didn't move them. Nothing happened. They just sat there and nothing happened. But
yeah,
it's because they didn't do anything. It was their lack. They lacked something. And so how do you bridge that gap, that you have an instruction manual before every show? I don't know. That's pretty weird.
No, and you can't talk before the show. I know they did that when one of the Spring Valley groups was on tour, and then when they came to East Troy, and they gave a whole, like, discussion first, and by then you're like, it's just like over. That's just not interesting to anybody to
do
that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
that sort of kills it.
You're kind of stuck then, so what do you do?
I guess it's pouring water on the earth and it will come back, huh?
There you go. We do not, at least I do not have a responsibility for the whole earth. I am not big enough for that. You know, What do I have responsibility for? Not even my country. I can't even do anything to change the course of my country. So my state, no way. I can't do anything. These people down here, they just keep doing the things I would never do down here. The city, it's a very, very small circle that I can do anything with. Maybe 20 people on earth are affected by me, and only very, very very superficially overall. So really, yes, the answer is you just keep doing it, and you don't count. You don't count how many people you're affecting.
No. We can count our time, you know, for our discipline, but we can't count the people, can we?
There you go, boy.
Yeah, I think part of being an optimist is not to be afraid, right?
Yeah, that's the main thing. I mean, what Krishnamurti, so great. Every negative thing we have in us is from fear. Fear is the root of every one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, fear, that's another good topic. Okay.
Yeah, so maybe Mary and I will talk again, maybe about fear. But that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please drop me a line at reasoningwithanoptimist.net and try to tune in again next week. This is Jack Brissett Mills. Bye-bye.